Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast, hosted by Amber Jeffrey. The podcast dedicated to having difficult and layered conversations on grief and loss. Through my own personal reflections on grief, inspirational guest appearances, and contributions from the incredible community, you will find an array of real, authentic, moving, and at most times humorous accounts of what it's really like to live with grief. It's not always doom and gloom, I promise you that. We know how to have fun whilst talking about the heavy stuff around here. So, welcome to the gang, the one you never asked to be a part of. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode. It is so nice to be here with you again. I am slowly still recovering from marathon. It will now be, by the time this episode comes out, a week and however many days. I tried to work out this morning and my hip just said no. So that was fun. I'm definitely feeling that itch to be getting back out onto the pavement, onto the road and running again. I'm missing it a lot. I tried to run on the treadmill and it was like my legs were just like too chopsticks that just had no mobility. They were like rock solid, had no motion in them at all. So I think it's going to be just swimming for me now. But like I said last week, look, I'm not going to make the marathon my whole personality. So she says. But yeah, I just want to say for one, actually, a huge thank you for all of your lovely, kind comments and messages regarding last week's bonus episode about the marathon. It was really quite a raw episode, wasn't it? I didn't realise how much emotion I think my body was storing. And I think, boy, did I need that, because I really just rested this past weekend and slept like hardcore sleep. I think my body really needed that expelling of emotion and just, well, time to process it and then to expel it. So it was, nice to actually do that on the podcast. I always have a weird thing, I think, of like really crying on the show. I don't really like doing crying on the internet because I think of digital blueprint or footprint. And I think, do I want my great-great-great-grandchildren to see me wailing on the internet? But it's really hard when you do cry yourself through an episode. You kind of can't pick a snippet where you're not crying. Or just, yeah, I'm just trying to work through that myself of that. You know, that's my own judgment of myself. And that crying publicly is okay. I mean, like, I cry in public, so why do I have a complex about crying on the internet? I don't know. Like, I can fully cry in public. Like, I cry on the tube all the time. I cry in the car all the time. Like, I cry walking all the time, yeah. And when I say that, I don't mean like I'm depressed. Like, I generally, that's just, I think crying is my way of just expressing, kind of, in a way. But before I get into today's episode, which is one that I think, if I'm honest, a little bit nervous to talk about, maybe nervous or just a bit unsure because I'm just a bit unsure and just kind of like I do with these episodes, kind of think out loud with them. But before I get into that, I wanted to let you know about the next cohort of Grief Gang group circles that are starting in June and will see us all the way through to mid to the end of July. So if you have no idea what I'm talking about, I now offer Grief Gang group circles, which will consist no more of 10 people who will meet over a set period of time, all in the hopes of finding connection, validation, shared experience, and hopefully community. And so far what I'm seeing with my previous groups, community is being built, and it's being built beautifully. I'm seeing friendships blossom. I'm seeing support systems be like blossoming. I'm seeing people are able to articulate their grief in ways they perhaps never have been able to before. And that is not me saying that's all down to me. That is down to the shared experience of a group circle of, I think what happens in these circles is just magic. And it is one, just total honor as the mentor to be able to bear witness to and to just facilitate the place. I am just the vessel for it. And the people who attend and show up week in, week out are the ones who are doing the real work and for themselves. And so I'm really, really looking forward to this next June cohort. I'm currently in a cohort right now that will see me to the end of May. We're going amazingly. It's just, they all are. There's never one that hasn't been, you know. I learned something from each different group every single time. So the next cohort of groups are June to July, like I said. And if you want a lowdown of what the dates are for all of them, because if I was to reel off a load of dates now, you'd be like, bloody hell, information overload. But I will just share with you, there is a mother loss group, a father loss group. They are both online. There is also a parent loss lunchtime group. And there is also, really excitingly, an in-person mixed loss group. So that is for anyone who has lost anybody. Doesn't have to be, you know, set for a specific type of loss, and that is in person, and that is in Shoreditch, London. So I'm really looking forward to all of them, but very much so that in-person space as well, and seeing what we can cultivate in person. To find out all that information in a lot more digestible way, you can visit the show notes of this episode and head to the links down in there, which will say either inquire about a mentoring form or a link just straight to my website where you can book on and find all the relevant dates and hopefully a group that works for you. But let's get into the episode, shall we?
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Today, I want to talk about anticipatory grief. And forgive me, I just need to put a prerequisite here of if you hear me say the words anticipatory grief, like in so many different ways, either anticipatory or anticipatory, or I might even use the word pre-grief, it's because the word absolutely tongue-ties me every single time. So I'm probably going to just use anticipatory grief, but I say it very slowly, like a fool. It just can never roll off my tongue. It can never roll off my tongue. But I wanted to talk today about anticipatory grief because, like I said a couple of minutes ago, of it has been something that I've wanted to explore. But I, you know, before I suppose my recent bereavements in my life, i.e. Poppy and a few other close loved ones, I'd never experienced anticipatory grief with my mum. As you may be familiar with, she was a very sudden loss and she was a heart attack. So I had no, I guess, personal experience on that. And I guess that did kind of hold me back a little bit, perhaps selfishly. And it's only been in really recent years that I have really began to, I feel, I guess, find my own words for what my experience of anticipatory grief is. But before we get into that and a few things that I've been discussing with the Grief Gang community about this topic, I just wanted to, you know, for some people listening to this, they might be like, what on earth is anticipatory grief? And I think for some people that is largely the case of not even knowing what this term is. And then once discovering what it is, being like, bingo, yeah. And that is quite sadly the experience I have heard a lot of. People have either felt these feelings that are, you know, are connected to anticipatory grief and have either been diminished in them or invalidated or just not heard, when actually they had been suffering with anticipatory grief for, you know, quite a long time. And it's only now actually maybe finding the words and, you know, the information on it. It's like, oh my gosh, I kind of maybe lost out on that support or just that knowledge about myself and what I was experiencing, you know? So anticipatory grief, by definition, you know, there's plenty online defining of in various ways what it is, but anticipatory grief is the feeling of grief experienced before someone has died, in a nutshell. It is, you know, typically seen when supporting someone who has either a long-term or a short-term diagnosis and illness, and that in turn is anticipating death within this illness. Or, you know, perhaps even maybe not, you know, having that concrete confirmation that this illness will end up in death, just, you know, either getting a diagnosis that could lead to death, you know. It is the anticipation that the worst is going to happen and this person that I love is going to die. And so, you know, when I talk today, I'm going to talk obviously only from my personal experience. So, and some you may resonate and some may not. And there is, I think, you know, a multitude of different experiences, of course, for people as to when anticipatory grief may come into play for them, or when they feel like they may have experienced it and can very definitively say, yep, that's when I feel like anticipatory grief entered my life. So, yeah, I'm going to in a little bit talk about, I guess, my experiences both with having a sudden loss with my mum and then also going through a few anticipated deaths in my life. And not like doing a pro/con list, because I really hate that question of what do you think's easier, what do you think's best, either a quick death or having someone you love die quickly or slowly. I just think it's a shit hand regardless. But now, being someone who has gone through it, I think before I used to say that, I would say, you know, always, I wouldn't be like, yeah, having my mum drop down dead one day is worse than someone who was able to say goodbye to their life. That wasn't how I thought at all. But I definitely would say, I definitely thought before I experienced anticipatory grief, I would just say, you know, either way is shit. Whether I really believe that completely, not that I didn't believe that one of them wasn't shit, but whether I did have a bias of that, yeah, my mum dropping down dead was probably more shit, you know, I'm just being honest here, that probably was my bias beforehand. But now, going through both and having both experienced someone you love drop down dead in a heartbeat, and then one and the other side anticipating someone you love dying and watching that happen, I am 100% solid and not being a phony saying both are shit. Like, they are both shit. And that's not trying to be like, oh, yeah, no, they are both shit, point blank. So I will talk about that in a little while. But a few things I wanted to address, I think, first with this episode. I don't think this episode is going to be very long. It might fall into like a bonus ep style. But I think one of the biggest thing when I was speaking with people on Grief Gang Instagram about this and in general is that there is a huge, I think, misconception that if you are loving and supporting someone who has received a long-term or short-term or terminal diagnosis, that, you know, then living with anticipatory grief and the knowledge that, yes, this person that I love is going to one day die, therefore, when they do die, makes it easier. It's just like, what? Like, you know, the horrible things I've heard people share of, well, you were expecting it, you know, and, well, you got to spend more time. It goes into the trope of the at leasts, right, doesn't it? And it's this misconception of, okay, though, you know, it was almost you were able to see with your loved one the contract of their life, like laid out in front of you, doesn't mean that when, you know, you get to the end of reading it or you arrive there finally, that it makes it easier. Like, just because if you're told 6 months prior, you'll probably got, you know, 4 to 6 months to live, doesn't mean that when that 6 months is up and that person started, that you were like, knew this was happening, knew this was coming, you're still utterly devastated. Like, it, you know, just because we may have been living with the feelings of grief way before the person has died, does not discount that when the person actually dies, that we're like, oh, I've been here before. I've been living in this state of mind and this state of grief before. Therefore, I'll breeze through. Perhaps for some people, I will say that I think it doesn't make it easier that you don't grieve, but I think you do have, again, speaking of experience, of my experience of, there is the feeling of, yeah, I have been here before. I know this feeling. These are not perhaps new feelings. They might be new in a new context, but these are not new feelings for me in terms of, you know, if I'm thinking of my experience of, it was not new to me to imagine a world without Poppy in it. Like, I had ruminated on that for time throughout her diagnosis. I had ruminated over that. So when, and kind of pictured what a world that Poppy would look like in my head. So when she died, and then I was now in a world that didn't have Poppy in it, it didn't make it any easier, of course, to navigate through, and still doesn't. But my mind had already allowed itself to go there, if that makes sense, you know. So, yeah, just to tie that up of the misconception of that, just because, you know, we can acknowledge that, yes, we are living with the grief of anticipatory grief, that when our person dies, it doesn't make it any easier. It might be familiar, but it doesn't make it any easier. And then the second thing that I'd like to touch on before I'll go further into like my experience of it and I guess my feelings with anticipatory grief is, I think for those of us who are navigating that there is this real, I guess, perhaps maybe judgment, maybe either from ourselves or that we feel is from others, is that if we listen, if we acknowledge, if we share the feelings of grief and anticipatory grief that we are feeling about our person who is dying, that it means that we are giving up, that we're giving up hope, that we're not keeping on fighting for them. And that is so hard, that is so isolating, because in anticipatory grief, you know, no matter who, what diagnosis it is, there is so much that you have lost already before that person has died. You have lost perhaps, you know, your dynamic in that relationship with your person. You have lost versions of your person. You have lost perhaps stability in your household. You have lost freedom, perhaps. You have lost so much already before your person has even died, but the feeling of not being able to share that out loud in fear of being judged, of, are you just giving up? Like, no, 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 don't say things like that because you'll bring it on, or that's not a way to talk, that's not a positive way to think, we've got to be optimistic here. And it's like, both and. I feel like I say this all the time, of that someone who is expressing their feelings of their grief that they are grieving for already as their person is dying, that can be held to as well as that person being optimistic. And I know for some who maybe are not in that, they think, how? And it's just like, it is like, I can air and share that, yeah, I'm grieving for the fact that my, you know, I'm talking an example of with perhaps Poppy and I, of that, yeah, I absolutely grieved the dynamic of our friendship, and that, you know, if Poppy was to have survived this, that it would probably never be the same. Or just grieving for the fact, you know, at that point and looking down at the journey of, I was grieving that I didn't have my duo. I was now a solo. I didn't have my comrade in the work that I was still continuing to do. And that felt really tough to do that. Like, this was the stuff that we should have been doing together, and holding the grief for that, whilst also absolutely with every fibre in me rallying for her and praying that she survived this. So me acknowledging that was not discounting like my optimism for this. I suppose it's really hard for those who are experiencing that and maybe feeling that they're getting, you know, closed door after closed door, whether that's from people in their lives where, you know, they want to talk about the grief and the type of grief that they are feeling, but everywhere is kind of looking the other way because they're thinking, no, that's inviting negative energy. That's not the spirit that we want. That's you giving up. So I just want to say for anyone with who might be experiencing that, is that your feelings and your feelings of anticipatory grief are so valid and deserve their spaces to be heard, to be explored, to be like torn apart, you know, because it's when we don't have these spaces to do that, it's when they ruminate, it's when they manifest like into quite literally like our bodies. And I know I'm sounding probably like woo-woo here, but it's like we have to get it out. We have to get it out. Like, even the most hardest of things to say, they have to come out. Otherwise, they literally just poison us, just poison our bodies. And even, you know, sometimes it feels harder to say these things out loud, of, you know, whether it's something that you feel maybe quite a lot of shame for in grieving for, or, you know, even saying, especially in anticipatory grief. I think this is one thing that I think I will say here before moving on to sharing about my experiences, is that I think one of the biggest things that we people experiencing anticipatory grief may struggle with, both through maybe a diagnosis, a long-term diagnosis, and in after death, is feeling that relief, you know? And that is so hard. Even as I say that, I feel like that frog in my throat. And because it's, you know, when someone is dying, perhaps, and you've got feelings of anticipatory grief, you think the last thing I can say to anyone is kind of, when will this be over? Like, when will this be over? And when we're asking when will this be over is when we're asking when will they die. And it's such a you know, a scale balance off, because it's, we of course don't want our person to die, but we know they are going to. And it's kind of like, when will it be? When will this be over? And it's not, we're wishing them away and just like, get it done, get it out of the way. But living in anticipatory grief, especially when it is nearing the end of someone's life, is pure agony, man. Like, it is pure agony. You just feel like you are living, you know, even perhaps not even right towards the end, you know, as soon as perhaps when you get that diagnosis, I feel like, and what I've heard from plenty of people is that, as soon as maybe, you know, for people, they feel their anticipatory grief starts at the time of diagnosis, and it feels like then it's like you taking that one last breath, and it's like you, and then for however long that duration of their illness and diagnosis, only when they die do you finally exhale. And it's not an exhale of, you know, it is an exhale of relief, but the most painful relief of your life, that it's all over, and that you, and I think that's with anticipatory grief, what can be confusing is that maybe you feel like you clock out when that person dies of the anticipatory grief, and I don't know, maybe get a little bit of a break, and then you clock into the grief of this new grief of them not being here, like anticipatory. Now this is active grief, if that makes sense, in a way. It's like an exchanging of hands, and you're like, oh, I've been here before. Going back to what I said earlier, like, oh, I've been here before. This isn't new to me. These feelings are familiar, Yeah. So I think I'm going to now, for this next part, I guess, talk about the differences between my experiences between both my mum and Poppy. And actually, I think I'm going to bring in here the experience I had with when my great aunt Maureen died in end of 2020 into 2021, or if I've got that terribly wrong, 2021 into 2022. I think it was end of 2020 and 21. The years all blur anyway. But the reason why, like, I've actually never really spoken about my Aunt Maureen on this podcast, because, like, her death was really, really hard and just really, really fucking sad. And the reason why I think I'm choosing to bring her today and to talk about it as, I guess, my first experience of anticipatory grief is because, well, she was my first experience of anticipatory grief after my mum died. So my mum died in 2016. And to just give a bit of context, she was our great aunt. She was my mum's aunt, but we just called her Auntie Maureen anyway. But she was more than an aunt. She was basically like our grandmother. We didn't have really that experience of what grandparents are like, right? So our dad's parents, they lived in the Caribbean, and they died a few years before, and we just didn't really have that opportunity to build a relationship. My mum's mother died 2 weeks after childbirth, which is my Auntie Maureen's sister. So my mum grew up without a mum, and then my mum's father, we are no contact. So, and it was a very difficult relationship growing up with him. So never really had that solid grandparent relationship, right? And so Auntie Maureen and her husband John were that for us. And, you know, her children never had children. So we essentially were like, we were kind of to both of each other the next best things, but not in like a you'll do, like it's, you know, we just did. It was for us, we were their grandchildren, and for us, they were our grandparents. And so Maureen, as always, was just a steadfast in our life. And in light of my mum's death, was that, you know, tenfold. And her death was, obviously, like I said earlier, my mum died of a sudden heart attack. And so all I'd known really about, I suppose, grief was the just suddenness and shockness of that. Some people can live and then can die the next day, quite literally, like my mum did. So I'd never, and as I was beginning to start with Grief Gang and meeting more people who had experiences of long-term illness, you know, even with Poppy and I, as we began our friendship and we began to share more about what our experiences of losing our parents were, you know, I got to learn about more about Poppy's dad's illness and what that was like over, you know, quite a long, he lived for 2 years after diagnosis, and kind of what that was really like, and just trying to, you know, put myself into her shoes, and, you know, plenty of other people that I would speak to about, you know, living through anticipatory grief. And so it was when my Aunt Maureen, to not go into a full death story, but it you know, bears sharing, of my Aunt Maureen, it was definitely year 2020, because it was the height of COVID. She had suffered a fall at home, and as she has fallen, she had hit her head on an object on the way down, and so she had gone into hospital. May I put a trigger warning in here for anyone if you don't want to hear about potential, like, you know, hospital paraphernalia, and just, yeah, if you want to skip, I'd say maybe just give it a good 3-4 minutes, let's say, so skip ahead if you would like to. And she had suffered a fall on the way down, hit her head on the way down, and she had gone into hospital. And like I said, it was peak COVID, so none of us could go see her. And it was very like, what is going on? She had then, she was really quite, the hit on the head was really quite harsh, and had really suffered. I don't know if it was like memory loss, but something had happened with her brain, the impact of it. And so like, we weren't able to speak with her, and it was a very intense kind of week or so. It was in May. I remember it was not long after her birthday. And then the next scare was she had contracted sepsis, and it was such a whirlwind. So it was almost about to be a sudden loss, and then it wasn't. Oh god, it was just mayhem. And she's contracted sepsis, and then the doctors had kind of, well, not say given up, but they had been like, there's nothing we can do for her now, like it is going through everywhere. It was like the next day afterwards, we were just gearing up for to wait for her to die. And then apparently she woke up and was like, what's for breakfast? Like on the ward round. And the doctor was like, for someone who's dying of sepsis, this is not right. Thankfully, the doctor took another look at her and something or the other, they decided, oh, we'll put her back on a course of antibiotics. We just thought, thank fuck she asked for what she wanted for breakfast and was quite perky. Otherwise, it would have just binned her off. Anyway, so that was that whirlwind. She comes out of hospital. She finally comes home. But, you know, it was not just come home. It was everything was changed from there out. It was, you know, changing of, you know, furniture at home, having a bed in the other living room downstairs and carers round the clock. Like, it was a lot. And with that, where I think I started to realise, even though she had survived this, and we still weren't out the woods, there were still some big question marks over her health and what, you know, what her life expectancy would be after this. And she, so she comes home and then she has carers round the clock. And I started to realise with every phone call that I was losing parts of her. And that made it really hard to call. Like I've probably said before, my mum was born and raised in Norfolk, Great Yarmouth, and that's where she lived. So it wasn't as easy, you know, just hopping down and seeing her. So we would rely on, you know, phone calls. And with every phone call, I realised I'm losing her more and more. And that was a whole, that I think was my first introduction to anticipatory grief, because when I would call her, she would, you know, so I think subsequently because of the fall and the hit on the head, it was a while for her to get like her solid memory back, or like in a chronological order. So sometimes I'd call and, you know, the first thing she'd say is, hello, Susan. She'd call me my mum's name. And obviously that would just be like a dagger to the heart. And then, you know, she started to run this story that I had a baby, and it was so hard to navigate through. She thought I'd had a baby boy whilst she was in hospital called Bobby. It was so funny. It was so elaborate. And now, obviously, I think if I have a baby boy, I have to call him Bobby. I love the name Bobby anyway. And I called her one day and she said, oh, how's the baby? And I thought she was talking about my niece, Nala. She was born not long after this. I was like, do you mean Nala? And she was like, no, your baby. And I was like, Maureen, do you think, for one, I'm having a fucking baby right now? And two, if I did, I wouldn't have told you. And it just went on for ages. And with every phone call, it would be the same conversation and kind of, you know, the grief of that, of trying to, of someone. And because as well, my Aunt Maureen was on the ball all the time. You could not pull nothing past her. So to talk with her on the phone and for her to not be herself and her sharp, witty self was just agony. And, you know, to watch again another matriarch in my life deteriorate was hell. And, you know, I've got no shame, and I've worked through it, of that. It did make me stop picking up the phone. It did make me deter, because I thought, I can't deal with that. I couldn't deal with it every single time, of like having to gear myself up for, not like the, not the stories didn't bother me, like they were funny at most times, but just the tiredness I'd hear in her voice, the confusion I'd hear in her voice when she'd be so annoyed with herself that she'd be like, oh, I'm just being silly, aren't I, Amber? And that was really, really hard. And that was really tough. And that was when I kind of thought, oh, fuck, Amber, you're grieving for her. And like, that's what this is. It's like, this is grief for her. Like, I felt like I grieved for the version of my Aunt Maureen long time before she died. So when she did eventually get a random melanoma cancer diagnosis about, how long was it after? I can't remember times, but it wasn't long after she'd come home. There was a melanoma diagnosis And it was melanoma that eventually took her life. And she died in November. By the time she had died, and it was over the weekend, we knew it was going to be happening soon across that weekend. By the time she had died, it was, I felt like in my head I had said goodbye to her a long time before. We'd actually gone to see her. I forgot this. We'd gone to see her about a month prior. We're sitting, gosh, this memory's just coming back to me. Amazing what the brain blocks out, doesn't it? Very apt with last week's conversation with Megan about grief in the brain and memories. We'd gone to see her about a month prior, and I remember sitting on her bed, and she was so tired, but the kids were keeping her lively. They were climbing all over her bed. It was so funny. And I remember, yeah, we were leaving, and it was one of those moments where neither of you want to say goodbye. And we both kind of knew, you know, whether she did, like my Aunt Maureen, I so see myself in her in ways, like out of all the women in my family, and especially my mum's, I think my Aunt Maureen was the one that I resonated with the most and that I could confide in the most, because I think she just got me. And yeah, saying goodbye was like, neither of us wanted to say goodbye, you know, I love you and I think this is it, you know. And it was just very like, I'll see you later, darling. She always called me darling. I think that's where I get my love for the word darling from. I loved picking up that phone and hearing hello, darling, and a East Anglian accent all the time. And yeah, neither of us wanted to say, you know, goodbye. It was just see you later. It was just see you later. I'll call you this week and we'll check in. And I left, yeah, that trip knowing that would be the last time I'd see my Aunt Maureen alive. And grappling with these realizations, like in real time, is a lot, right? It's a lot, like really sitting and thinking about this, like acknowledging that that's probably, as I close the door, the last time I'm going to see someone that I love so much. It's just unfathomable, right? And then it's like, I think after Maureen died, I reflected on, like I was saying earlier, you know, out of the two, which is easier? And I kind of thought, and at that time, I remember really thinking, like, it is possibly one of the most cruelest things to watch someone you love die. Like, I don't know, you know, like I didn't see my mum die. My mum just, you know, she had the heart attack, put her into hospital, and then she had another heart attack, and that was it, you know? Like, I don't know how I would have coped if I had to continuously see parts of my mum die over and over again. It's confusing, right? And then navigating both of those experiences, like, what the hell, man? Like, what the hell? I'm really just sat poised thinking about it now. And I think then actually going through what I went through with my Aunt Maureen, and then what that, I guess, in turn, I guess kind of prepared me for with Poppy, because I think if Poppy was my first experience of anticipatory grief, I mean, I don't know if I'd be here talking to you at this point already. I don't know. But I think going through what I went with my Aunt Maureen was able to, in some ways, prepare me for the feelings that I was going to feel with Poppy. With Poppy, I think what, in a way, you know, Poppy's death was both anticipated, but both sudden as well. Because it had a very quick turn, which, you know, I won't go into for the sake of the family. Not that it's been asked of me, but of just, you know, of parts of. But yeah, things turned very quickly, and there was almost, you know, when Poppy called me and told me the diagnosis, which is the anniversary date of that, is very soon. In a matter of, well, when this episode goes out, it will be this week, was the day Poppy called me and told me. And from that day, I started grieving for her. I think because I had been there before with, like I said, my Aunt Maureen, and I just thought, I don't know. I thought I'd just try and get ahead of the game, you know, as we all sometimes do. Even someone like me who does grief for a living and works with people for grief for a living, there are still ways that we will always try to find, I guess, cheat codes. I don't know. And throughout those months of the summer months of this time last year, I think with every... It was weird. It's like I grieved for parts of Poppy, but then also... You know, like I said earlier, it was both and. I was grieving for parts of her that, you know, we could no longer access, or she could no longer access for us, you know, or for herself, or just or parts of her life. And but then also had this, you know, undeniable optimism that she would survive this. And I suppose that's, I guess, the really confusing part in anticipated grief as well, is that you can anticipate the death of someone and imagine what that will be like, but then also still hold on to this relentless hope. You know, the night before Poppy died, when her mum called and said there's nothing they can do, and I come down the next day, or I come up that night, and then the next day as well, and even that morning I woke up and... You know, my body's anticipating, your friend is going to die today. You know, it's all I kept saying to myself. Poppy is going to die today. Your friend is going to die. And still, in those final hours before, there was this undeniable hope that she'll just do something and she'll turn it around. And that's really confusing when I literally am seeing on paper, like, she's going to die and I'm anticipating it. And it's just, it's, yeah, the confusing parts of our brains and our spirits, I think, too. But I think, yeah, like I said, the experience of my great aunt was able to, I don't know if the word help, but it helped me to anticipate the anticipation. I think in a nutshell is what I'm trying to say, is that it helped me anticipate the anticipation. But, you know, going through anticipatory grief, and after Poppy died, like I said earlier, there was this, you know, you kind of clock out. I felt like I clocked out of the everyday worry that I had for Poppy. You know, that everyday, oh my God, haven't heard, had an update for a while. Has something awful happened? Oh my God, this, that, you know, that, and just that anxiety every single day of when you love someone who is ill and then they die, and it's like the anxiety of that goes, and like I said, a new one comes in, a new one taps in, whether it's an anxiety or it's a depression, it's the grief, you know, it's, you clock out of one thing and you clock back into a new version of grief. And it's tough, right? It's really tough. So if you can hear the lawnmower going off in the back there. My neighbour loves to mow his lawn. I'm not even joking you, 4 to 5 times a month. That is on average once a week, folks. It's a very lovely fucking lawn, if I tell you that for free. You know, he does keep it very pristine. Okay, so I think I'm going to bring it to a wrap there. I did receive loads of, I guess, kind of like sharings on anticipatory grief. And I think I want to do a post on it. So if you've got an experience of anticipatory grief, but what I want to put in this post is things that can help, you know. I feel like what I shared there maybe hopefully might have helped early in the beginning, but I'd really love to hear from people who have experienced or are experiencing anticipatory grief. What helps you? How do you talk about it? How do you navigate it? I'd really, really love to put a really solid post or even like a whole resource thing together for it. I might put it on the Substack as well. Subscribe to my Substacks in the show notes. And do something on that because, you know, I love to just share the experiences of anticipatory grief as well. They are so valid, but I'd also really love to be able to offer some solid advice, experiences and just, yeah, tips to help people who are navigating through it, whether it's quite practical places to go or just ways of thinking, exercises that you might do, you know, anything just to help people who are also experiencing anticipatory grief. So with that, I want to say a huge thank you for listening to this episode. And if you feel that it has resonated to you, I'm so happy. Please do send me a message. I'd love for you to, you know, head to the comment section of this. When this episode goes out, there will be obviously like an Instagram reel. I'd love for you to go on to the comment section there and share in the section your experience, like I just said there. Maybe some advice, some tips would be greatly appreciated in the comment section of this episode's reel and TikTok. So please do reach out. And if there's a topic that you want to hear covered on the show, please do let me know. I love to have your feedback and your input as to what you want to hear on this episode, because it helps my brain as well, because sometimes my brain really doesn't work. So it's always good to hear from you as well, what you want to hear from the show. Like I said in the beginning, if you want to join a grief gang group circle, please head to the show notes of this episode and fill in an inquiry form. Or if you're ready to delve right in, you can head to the show notes as well, visit my website and book yourself onto one of the groups. For now, take care, and I will see you very, very soon. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I appreciate more than you'll ever know your support of the show, and I hope this episode has supported you in one way or another. Spread the good word about the Grief Gang podcast. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Subscribe to the show on your chosen listening platform so you're first to know when a new episode drops. Visit the show notes below to follow the Grief Gang on all social platforms, and pay our website a visit to find further resources and ways to get in contact and work with me. Look after yourself and know that you are never alone. I'll see you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.